Sarah, tell me a little bit about yourself and the project that you're working on.
Sure. So I'm working on a project about the handicrafts program at hospitals like the Kamsul Hospital. So hospitals for Indigenous people that were set up by the federal government and the kinds of arts and crafts programs that they had there. And I came to this work because I was working in a tuberculosis research setting part-time. I started learning about how people still suffer from tuberculosis today. And as part of that, I started learning about the historical context. And this brought me to pieces, to carvings, to dolls. And I got really curious about how these things ended up in museums, why they were made in hospitals in the first place, who made them, and I wanted to find out more about that story.
So tell me a little bit about the Charles Kamsul Hospital. Where was it located and what was it?
So the Charles Kamsul Hospital was located here in Edmonton. At that time, they called it an Indian hospital, so it was a separate hospital for First Nations, Inuit, and sometimes Métis patients, set up by the federal government mostly as a response to tuberculosis. So tuberculosis rates were really high in the 40s and 50s. Up to that point, the federal government hadn't really done much for Indigenous peoples in terms of doing something about the tuberculosis epidemic. But after World War II, they did. And there was a building already available in Inglewood, which now Inglewood in Edmonton. At that time, it was on the edges of the city. It was a building that had already been used as a military hospital and as a staging ground for the building of the Alaska Highway. The government took it over and made it into the Charles Kamsul Indian Hospital.
Actually, it operated for quite a number of years, didn't it?
Yeah, it opened in 1946 in that capacity, and the handicrafts program actually opened that very same year. So from the very beginning, handicrafts were a part of the regime of care at the hospital.
How would that work? What kinds of things would the patients do? And I suppose I should ask you too, like, how old were the patients?
Well, first of all, there were patients of all ages, so from little children all the way up to elderly people. And in terms of the handicrafts program, how it worked was there were craft workers there available. There were supplies at the hospital. It was part of the education department, so children especially, and adults too, would go to school at the hospital. And as part of their education, they were also encouraged to do art and craft. For the employees at the hospital, I think this was a way to keep people busy during long hours. I mean, you can imagine the 1940s and 50s, you know, not every room would have a television. There was no television. Some rooms would have radios. So it was something to do during those long hours of treatment. So there were craft workers, there was a whole craft work program, supplies were brought in. Later on, there were carving instructors, specifically facilitating carving by Inuit patients at the hospital. And so, yeah, the way I understand it is people were able to participate in making all manner of things. So, you know, you might have come to the hospital already knowing how to make things, and you could get supplies from the program that way. Or you could learn something new, and someone would be there to help with that. I think people also brought their own supplies often and learned from each other. So in addition to having a kind of formal handicrafts program or occupational therapy, I keep switching between these words because it's hard to capture everything with one word. But the staff would facilitate, but also patients were facilitating it for themselves too.
These were done as Native art, like not just sort of let's build a birdhouse kind of thing. Can you describe what some of these artworks were like?
Yeah, there's a huge range of artwork that was made at the Kamsul Hospital. And I should say that about over 400 of these pieces are at the Royal Alberta Museum right now. When the hospital closed, they were transferred over to the provincial government and ended up at the museum there. People also have them in their private collections. But the kind of things that people made varied from leatherwork, beadwork, carving in wood and stone, dolls, sewn goods, as well as even things really unique to the hospital, like photo albums made out of old x-ray slides and things like that. But yeah, people were encouraged to make Indigenous crafts, so soapstone carvings, beadwork, things like that. And these were sold in a gift shop. In Edmonton at that time, I understand it was one of the places Edmontonians could go to buy Native art and craft. And, you know, another thing to remember is this is the 40s and 50s. So especially in terms of Inuit art is just kind of becoming a thing in Southern Canada. And so that story can be told from the hospital as well as from northern communities.
So these were sold in the hospital's gift shop. What happened to the money?
Well, that's a good question. What I've read is that the money was supposed to go to cover kind of costs for the handicrafts program, and then the patient was supposed to get whatever was left. I'm working through right now a series of documents that detail kind of carvings in. So this was from the carving program, so carving submitted to the gift shop or the carving program, and cash or in-kind supplies out to try and sort out over time, you know, how many things were people making and how much were they actually getting compensated for their work.
So you say the Royal Alberta Museum has about 400 of these crafts in their collection. Do you have any idea how many were made?
No, and that's something that I'm really interested in. So one carver that I talk about sometimes is James Tegyapak, and he carved a bird that really struck me. It's a bird stuck in a trap over its eggs, so it was trapped taking care of its eggs, basically. It's carved in soapstone, and it's currently held at the Museum of Anthropology at UBC. So James Tegyapak, he carved that carving, but he also carved, I think, about 600 other carvings. And the reason why I know that is because each piece from the carving program, so this was a program that ran mostly in the 1950s, had a unique identifier number. So Tegyapak's would be, his first carving would be T1, and then T2, and then T3, and so on. Well, I've located carvings of his that go up to T600 and something. So I'm assuming he made that many carvings. Now, he was in the hospital for over 11 years. It's a very, very long time, and I know he was a very prolific carver because his pieces are not only at the Royal Alberta Museum and the Museum of Anthropology. I've seen them for sale online on eBay and in online auction sites and things like that, too. This is interesting to think about because oftentimes we talk about we, I mean academics or whoever, we have a tendency to talk about these things in isolation. So maybe we talk about the residential school system as a thing, or the Indian hospital system as a thing, or museums or universities. But this really shows that it involves a lot of those things. It's really all interconnected. You know, we can see the movement from hospital to museum, and these pieces are in people's homes, right? People may have them in their private collections. The pieces have moved around. Even if we just looked at Tegyapak and we thought about where all of those 600 pieces end up, it really brings a lot of people to this history. And I'm of settler heritage. I'm a Ukrainian person. It makes me reflect on kind of what my place is in all of this, too.
What did this program of doing the arts and crafts, what did it mean to the people who were doing them, the people who were the patients?
Yeah, that's another great question. I feel like I talked earlier about how for the staff, it was a way to have people adhere to their treatment regimes. It was a way to set people up for when they got out of the hospital, they would have something to do and to make. But for the patients, I understand it would be significantly different. And I think for them, it was more about reconnecting to their home places potentially. So carving pieces that link back to where they're from, their family members, their laws and stories and things like that. And I'm thinking right now of a particular carving that I recently saw in someone's private collection. And it's a set of dogs pulling a dog sled. And this kind of carving has been done many times, but this one was so unique because all of the dogs had just really individually painted spots. One had a short little tail, and you have to imagine that the carver was thinking of specific dogs in that instance. I've also read in the Camsel Arrow about people making things not for sale in the gift shop, but for each other, so for family members who live far away, and learning from each other while in the hospital too. Patients would also make and gift things to employees of the hospital, so to nurses or doctors. And so you can see these things really in relationship. It's about making relationships or maintaining those relationships with each other.
We've talked about the Charles Camsel Hospital in Edmonton, but there were other hospitals. What other hospitals are you looking at?
So there were hospitals like this across Canada. I think there were over 20 of them, and many of them had handicraft programs as well. So another part of my work is trying to document those hospitals as well, their handicraft programs, and try and learn a little bit about where those pieces ended up. For example, one that I'm working on more closely is a set of carvings at the McCord Museum in Montreal. And those all came from the Parc Savard Hospital in Quebec City. That was a former immigration hospital, and it was converted into a tuberculosis hospital kind of around the same time period that the council was. But again, there are multiple other hospitals and multiple other carving and craft programs, and these also seem to be interconnected. So one of the same people who was in charge of the carving program at the Parc Savard Hospital, he was also in charge of the carving program at the council hospital. So another piece of my work is tracing where all of those things ended up, or trying to anyway.
What will you do with all this information?
Good question. I'm an academic. I'm a researcher, so I will probably write about it. I love doing public presentations about this work to let people know where things are located and what kinds of things are out there. I'm also working with a couple of students here at the University of Alberta to try and make this information more accessible. So what can we do to make a more patient-focused or family member of patient-focused resource so that if people have questions about what happened to a family member that was sent away, where could I start looking for information about them, for pieces that they may have carved, who can I get in touch with? So that's another thing that's on the go. It's also part of a larger project here at the university called Object Lives and Global Histories of Northern North America. That group has a website at www.objectlives.ca. And so there's information there already and more to come.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
You're welcome. Thank you.